I'm Megan Luscombe and you're listening to season 4 of my podcast, Real Talk. This season focuses on some of the most important topics surrounding personal growth, relationships and business. So settle in and let's chat.
I acknowledge the Boonwurrung people, traditional owners of the unceded land on which I record this podcast, and pay my respects to elders past and present. Hello, hello, my loves. Thank you so much for tuning into my podcast, Real Talk with Megan Luscombe. Today, I am talking with Alice Child. She is a somatic sexologist and a sex counselor who helps individuals, couples, and groups achieve a happier, healthier, and more fulfilled sex life, whatever that means for them. She believes everyone deserves fulfilling sex in relationships and has a huge passion for opening up conversations, confronting taboos, and creating inclusive spaces free of judgment. She also founded Vulva Dialogues, which empowers individuals to learn more about their bodies and to prioritize their sexual health. I am so excited to be having her on the podcast today to talk about sexual wellness, what that means, what that looks like, and also how we can practice establishing a better sexual relationship with ourselves. So with all of that in mind, let's get into it. I would really love for you to talk about what is one's sexual relationship with themselves.
Yeah, it's such a good question. And it's a question that I think most people haven't really asked themselves or thought about. And in my experience, when I ask people that question, which I do quite a lot in sessions, they fall into approximately three different camps. You know, the camp of, wow, I've never really thought about it, I'm not really sure. The camp of, you know, actually, I don't have a very great, you know, relationship with sex or my sexual self for one reason or another, which we can talk about in a minute. Or the third one is, yep, I actively prioritize this. And as a result, you know, I'm really aware of where I'm at, either in a great way or just self-awareness of where they're at with their sexual journey. And I think it's actually quite similar if you think about, you know, if you ask the same question to people about their physical health or their mental health, you know, it's either something that they're actively prioritizing and they could say, yep, you know, I'm eating well or going to the gym or doing self-care or whatever it is, or they're feeling that it is not in a good position and they're noticing the impacts that it's having on them day to day. And I think it's the same with sexual wellness. You know, it's either something you're actively prioritizing or you're noticing negative impacts of not prioritizing it day to day. And that's sort of when you become aware of it, or you're sitting somewhere in the middle and like, oh, I'm not really sure. I haven't really given it much thought.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's, I think a lot of people would probably fall into the I haven't given it much thought sort of landscape. But when we do talk about, you know, sexual wellness and our sexual relationship with ourselves or just our sexual being, what falls underneath those sort of big terms?
Yeah, absolutely. So sexual wellness, you know, it isn't just your sexual health, which, you know, often people think of sexual health as, you know, your STI status and diseases and things like that. Whereas sexual wellness is, yes, it includes, you know, sexual health, but it also includes, importantly, pleasure. And pleasure is so often left out of the conversation when people talk about sexual health. But actually, sexual health, as defined by the World Health Organization, isn't just, you know, reproductive health and sexual diseases. It is pleasure, it is consent, it is relationships, it is self-pleasure, masturbation. All of these different things fall under sexual wellness, and they've actually defined it as a human right. So having access to happy, healthy sex and relationships is a human right, including pleasure, not just the absence of disease or the absence of coercion and lack of consent.
Okay, so there's some really, really important things that are falling under these brackets, which I love, and I love that there's distinctions between them. Do you find it when you're dealing with your clients that people are receptive to experiencing their own sexual pleasure, or that there are somewhat cultural, societal barriers that enable them from actually doing it?
Yeah, there's a lot of barriers. You know, we still live in a very conservative society. And sexual shame in one form or another is still extremely pervasive. And I'd go so far as to say that I think everyone lives with some form of sexual shame, whether it's about their body or their appearance, or, you know, if you think about formative experiences when it comes to sex, so many people's formative experiences are tinged with embarrassment or awkwardness or the feeling that they were doing something wrong or forbidden. And there's sort of nothing more taboo and hidden in my experience for many people than self-pleasure and masturbation. And that's either been explicitly taught to them, you know, do not touch yourself in that way, you know, don't do that, or this is for private time, or implicitly through social pop culture references where people walk in and you're masturbating and it's the most embarrassing thing in the world. So even if it hasn't been explicitly taught as something that we should be embarrassed or shameful about, implicitly society definitely teaches it. So it is definitely a topic that a lot of my clients struggle with, learning how to accept that they are sexual beings and that masturbation is a very healthy and happy part of that expression. And it doesn't change the sex life that they have with their partner. You know, masturbation and sex are two very different things and they scratch two very different itches.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really interesting you say that, because obviously on my side, working with couples as well, I often come up against heterosexual couples in particular who find masturbation to be somewhat as a threat in their relationship if a person, an individual is experiencing and engaging in that without them. And it's almost a sort of weaponized conversation and experience of, you know, well, if you are with me, then you shouldn't need to masturbate. And I say that in inverted, you know, quotes, because I think that's also something that women in particular have been taught to be subservient to them, to their male's pleasure. So if they should be giving it to them. Is that a conversation?
Absolutely.
Is that a conversation that you also come up against?
Exposed to.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you're right. It does tend to be something even more prevalent in heterosexual couples. And I think there's all sort of myths and beliefs that underlie that reaction. You know, it's the myth and the belief that we are responsible for our partner's pleasure is a big one there. So, you know, if I'm saying also inverted commas, doing my job right, you know, as a partner, or you find me attractive enough, you enjoy our sex life, you shouldn't have to masturbate as much, or you shouldn't have to enjoy porn. And that complete lack of awareness of those differences. And actually, we aren't responsible for our partner's pleasure. You know, they are responsible for their own pleasure. And sometimes that is the masturbation, sometimes that's the partnered sex, sometimes it's, you know, they're going for a great massage. You know, pleasure can look very different from one day to the next. And we are responsible for our own pleasure. It's not up to our partners. But there's this script of, you know, what it means to be good in bed is, you know, can I make her come? Can I make him come? Can I do that particular thing? And so I think masturbation, but as you say, is weaponized. It becomes a perceived threat in the relationship for that reason. But also, I think difference in libido often comes into play here. You know, if one partner isn't masturbating as often or has a slightly lower sex drive or a significantly lower sex drive, it can feel a little threatening to hear about their partner's higher sex drive, because there's often quite a lot of guilt that surrounds mismatched libido in a relationship. You know, one partner feels guilty that they're not enough or they're not sexual enough, and the other partner feels, you know, or could feel resentment that they're not having their needs met as often as they would like. And so often when that guilt or that resentment is present, it's not surprising that these topics become really charged.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's topics that a lot of couples really struggle to actually articulate, but to also address when it's coming up with them as individuals. Do you think that if there is an individual in a relationship who is somebody who wants to engage in self-pleasure more and another person doesn't, obviously we can say masturbation and sex, they can be exclusive activities. They just, a person could be masturbating because they enjoy their own self-pleasure. It doesn't actually mean that they're not feeling sexually connected or satisfied with their partners. But often, as just of what you've just said, the partner can internalize that feeling of it, they must be masturbating because I'm not as sexually available or wanting as much sex. And I think that's probably a really delicate area of a sexual relationship with someone. So how do you see couples navigate the space where one person doesn't want to, let's say one person says, oh, I'm happy to have self-pleasure twice a month, and the other person's like, oh, I love doing it 4 days a week, but it's got nothing to do with their lack of sexual connection as a couple, but one person may internalize that. How do couples navigate that space?
Yeah, it's so often about the mindset of curiosity, you know, being curious about, you know, where your partner's coming from. People masturbate for all sorts of reasons, for helping them sleep at night, for stress relief, for, you know, yes, like physical release, and also just fun, getting new ideas, you know, building anticipation, all sorts of reasons. And so having a mindset of curiosity, you know, about your partner, so, oh, you know, I didn't know you masturbated so often, you know, and instead of the reaction being one of, you know, shock and fear, try and make the reaction one of curiosity. Oh, what do you do? What do you use? What do you think about? You know, why? When do you do it? You know, and it will really change the conversation. And you might learn something about your partner that you would never have learned in that reaction of fear. And also, as you say, they can be very separate activities. You know, it's very healthy and normal to have privacy from your partner and to, you know, masturbate on your own and enjoy doing that, but it can also be something that you can do together. And often asking your partner when they initiate sex, you know, or thinking about it afterwards, you know, what are your needs when that person's initiating sex? Sometimes it is about intimacy and connection. Sometimes it's about sort of physical touch. Sometimes it is about, you know, stress relief, or wanting to reach orgasm. And so those different needs, depending on what you're craving when you initiate intimacy with your partner, they can often be met in lots of different ways. And one of the ways that those needs can sometimes be met, if one person's feeling sexual and the other person really isn't, is you can masturbate in front of each other or hold space, you know, with your partner when they're masturbating and just sort of lying on their chest. And, you know, just being present with them. And so again, that curious mindset rather than the fear mindset really opens up the potential for how else can we experience our sexuality together and separately.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just I definitely really want to emphasize that coming at it from a place of curiosity. I think most couples and individuals would benefit from multiple scenarios of life and relationships to approach it from a place of curiosity. I think one thing I notice in the couples that I work with, their instant reaction is to take it from a place of threat. It's from a that fear mindset that if I, it must be I'm lacking if somebody is engaging in masturbation without me. And I've worked with a few couples where one person has said, oh, I'm not interested in having sex tonight, if one person has initiated. And then they've followed through with saying, and you also can't masturbate because I'm not having sex with you tonight. And then we enter in a whole other arena of, you know, control and manipulation. And I notice from following accounts on social media that are sex positive that there are always people in the comment threads lurking with the support of, you know, masturbation is about the couple together, and if you're doing it without your partner, then you're cheating. And I say that in inverted because cheating has taken on a whole new type of, you know, word now. So for the people who are listening to this and maybe they're going, oh, it makes me feel really uncomfortable knowing that my partner might be going to the shower tonight to masturbate without me because I'm not interested. How can they, again, come at that from a place of curiosity, but how can they also be kind to themselves and to their partner without causing unnecessary shame, guilt, and you know, maybe unnecessary secrecy for something that doesn't need to be hidden.
Absolutely. And as you say, there is a lot of shame and guilt associated with these topics, and it is very natural and normal for people's reaction when they're a bit surprised by something to go, you know, oh, I didn't know that about my partner, to go to, as you say, the sort of fear response, you know, does this mean there's something wrong with me? And often if you find something out about your partner, like the frequency that they watch porn or the fact that they bought a vibrator and you didn't know about it, it takes you by surprise. Just be a bit easy on yourself, because our initial knee-jerk reaction isn't always the reaction that once we've had a time to think about it and to reflect on it, we'll actually change our mind. So if you've also had that experience on the other side of it, where your partner's had a negative reaction to something, you know, give them a little bit of time before bringing it back up again. And, you know, as I said about that curious mindset, really help to try and see the situation from the other person's point of view, rather than sitting with your personal feelings about the topic and that clouding what you're projecting onto your partner. For example, he's watching porn, therefore he thinks those people are more beautiful than me. And that's a fear-based response. Actually go to him and with a bit of vulnerability, leaning forward rather than leaning away, of, you know, why you had that initial reaction, what it made you feel, and wanting to understand it from his perspective. And it also is a huge weight off your shoulders once you realize that all of these beliefs that, you know, vibrators are a threat, porn is a threat, once you realize that all of these beliefs are not true, it can just make you, oh, I've had all of this, all of this fear and anxiety and insecurity about this, and instead of that, I can replace it with joy. And, you know, say to my partner, oh, you were masturbating last night when I was asleep, you naughty dog. What were you thinking about?
Use it as a tool of connection.
A tool of connection, not disconnection.
Yeah. And I think that's really such an important sort of reframe to look at it. And I think a lot of people, as individuals, we do react from a knee jerk a lot of the time, especially if we feel wounded, we just pounce. And oftentimes I will say to my clients that these moments of discomfort, actually, if you use them in a positive way, can make you so much more connected to your partner or to whoever in those moments, because those vulnerabilities is what actually connects us as humans when we see the realness of ourselves. And I think when it comes to sex in particular and relationships, I think as a society, we still have a long way to go about allowing that space to be vulnerable and connecting, as opposed to really steeped in this secrecy of shame and guilt. And
absolutely.
Have you seen a big change maybe when it comes to, you know, your side of the fence in your profession, when it comes to an individual's or a couple's ability to maybe speak more freely about their own sexual self or sex in a relationship?
You know, to be honest, not hugely. I've been sometimes joyously surprised by couples or individuals' ability to talk openly and happily about these topics. Of course, there are the exceptions, and of course, there are a lot more sex positive conversations happening. You know, you mentioned Instagram, TV shows that are more sex positive, just general positive resources out there that people are getting exposure to. But in my experience at the moment, the impact that that's having day to day on people's relationships, it still hasn't trickled down yet. There's still a lot of that shame that needs to be reworked, and I'm seeing it, you know, still in very young clients, you know, people who are sort of 18-19, you know, are still holding some of the viewpoints that we've talked about already in this podcast, you know, views of sex toys you know, views of masturbation, views of, you know, being good in bed is all about making your partner come, and it's all on your shoulders. And the biggest myth that I sort of see enacted in different ways over and over and over again is this myth that great sex should be silent. So no one's talking or saying what they like or asking for what they want or telling their partner what feels good. So it should just be, you know, really silent and without words. It should be intuitive. You know, everyone should just know what to do. And even though sex is the most natural thing in the world, it doesn't mean that it's intuitive. It is a skill, just like any other. And it's a skill that takes time and practice and teaching your body, you know, what it likes and what it needs. Yeah. So people don't just snap their fingers and become, you know, these intuitively sexual beings. It takes something that we have to, you know, learn. And we're expected to do all that without any education, without any conversation. Mm-hmm. And of course, the result of that is shame or awkwardness or embarrassment when something doesn't go as you expected it. But also it's bodies. So bodies take us by surprise all the time. They do things that we don't expect all the time, especially when we put them through new experiences like sex, which is all filled with all of these new chemicals and hormones and movements and actions. The body's going to surprise us.
Yeah.
And instead of being able to normalize those experiences or work out what's going on, you know, we internalize them through embarrassment and awkwardness. So, and that still hasn't changed. None of those conversations have changed. So not as much as it needs to answer your question. I'm not seeing the change that is needed just yet.
Yeah, which I often find myself being so frustrated with watching like movies or new shows that are coming out on Netflix and platforms where there will always be a heterosexual couple having their first sexual experience and they've never had sex together before, but the first time that they do, he absolutely makes her have the most glorious orgasm, and they have so much synchronicity together. And you know, the way they film it, it's like they've been having sex for decades. Like that's how well they know each other. And I say to myself, obviously, as you know, a 36-year-old, that I can look at that and go, that is so unrealistic. Like that is unrealistic. But myself, when I was 15, 16, 17, growing up watching shows, very much doing the exact same thing, I can go, my expectations of sex when I was growing up, well, first, you know, I thought I had to have sex with men. That's what I had to do. And I'm married to a woman now. So look, you know, what you're watching and what you're doing and what we're participating in can definitely have an impact on how we show up as our sexual selves. Do you often see or maybe read books or see things on TV with that unrealistic depiction of sexual satisfaction and have moments of frustration, or do you use them as opportunities for education? Maybe I'm the person who just gets really pissed off.
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, I know exactly the scenes you mean. Maybe I'm just too much of a romantic and I'm in the moment and just enjoying the film to let it bother me too much. And I definitely think with the introduction of intimacy coordinators in sex scenes now in the film industry, I've definitely noticed scenes that are, you know, beautifully choreographed in terms of the reality of
absolutely,
you know, the slight awkwardness and the approaches and the looking for body language cues and those little moments. And it's like, wow, sex scenes 10 years ago would never have looked like
that's
that.
That's very true.
So I have, you know, watched them, and I know your next question is going to be, oh, do you have your favorite one? And no, I do not have a favorite one that I can think of on the top of my head. But I've definitely been pretty blown away by some beautiful, more realistic first encounters on the screen. But I agree, it would be so nice to watch a first encounter that is, wouldn't it be wonderful if it was research based and, you know, talk to hundreds of couples about their first ever sexual encounter, the good, the bad, what made it amazing, what made it a bit clunky, you know, what they had to ask each other, you know, when they laughed, when they had to go, okay, that's not really working.
Yeah, that wasn't feeling good. We need to stop that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be beautiful to watch a scene like that, which is still extremely sexy, extremely hot and steamy and amazing, but that has some of those moments in it, and it would just be a beautiful, beautiful thing to watch. Yeah, so if you're listening, any film producers.
Yeah, any film producers, hey, we're this is what we're looking for, right? This is what we're wanting. And I think that's the – I think the frustrations that I have is because there is so much – obviously still emphasis on heterosexual couples in the majority of movies and films having sex. So I look at that and I go, it they're, most sex scenes for heterosexuals are still with that quite romantic, obviously, which we love. But it's the unrealistic sexual experience for a first time that I find myself frustrated at. And I suppose it's I look at it from a perspective of there is a few shows like Sex Education on Netflix, got it right. They got the awkwardness right, you know, and even when it came to the same sex, you know, the girls who were, you know, starting to experiment with themselves, you know, the awkwardness, like, that was fantastic to watch because it was so relatable for myself. But I think people being able to see that, like just what you said before, that there is sexiness and there is excitement and so much amazingness in that vulnerability. And that is where we probably can benefit from focusing more education on and maybe more awareness on. So that it can be enjoyed equally by both partners and whoever is in the experience, as opposed to thinking that sex is a job of somebody, I need to make this person come and because this is what it looks like.
Absolutely. You know, even just the simple thing of seeing a woman in a sex scene, you know, move her hand down to stimulate her own clitoris or grab the vibrator to stimulate her own clitoris because, 80 or 85% of women do need external clitoral stimulation in order to reach orgasm. Yes, there are those that don't, but it would be so nice if you saw more of that, you know, in porn, in films, and allow more people to normalize their sexual experiences. Because a lot of people who come to me feel broken, you know, broken that they can't, you know, make their body do certain things in a certain way that they've seen on porn or in films. And then when they realize the education and they realize how normal that experience is, it's a huge relief to them because they've often over 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years created this narrative about their body and about their sexuality. Because again, to what we're talking about before, the silencing, no one's talking about these topics. And you can teach your body new tricks as well.
Yeah, I love that.
What you've experienced all your life doesn't mean that's what your that's the cards that you've been dealt. You know, your body has this amazing capacity to learn new ways of feeling pleasure and new ways to build arousal and, you know, to reach orgasm in all of these different ways. But what we tend to do is we reinforce the neural pathways of just a couple of them because we just learn quite early on that's what we're needing, and then you rinse and you repeat and it becomes more and more embedded in the sort of other pathways. They're still possible, but we forget that they're there. So again, that curious mindset, removing the goal of orgasm, making pleasure and curiosity and connection your goal instead, that's when people can teach their body new tricks and learn new ways of feeling pleasure. And it would be great if you saw some of that mirrored in popular culture, but maybe that's asking too much.
Well, look, hopefully that's, you know, that's something that's coming. And I would love, because I feel like there are going to be people listening to this, nodding along to the things that you're saying and maybe going, oh, I can teach myself new things, or I can start working on removing this shame, and I can give myself permission to, you know, experience pleasure for myself and just really start this journey, because I'm sure you would agree it's never too late. There's no age barrier to, you know, joining this self-exploration of our own sexuality. So if somebody is nodding along going, yes, Megan, all those things you just said are what I am feeling right now, how could they work with somebody like you?
Yeah. So my title is a somatic sexologist, sex counselor. There's lots of, well, I say lots, there's a growing number of us out there. And, you know, I personally work with people online as well as in person. Mm-hmm. So just search your local area for terms like sex counselor, sex therapist, sexologist to see who's around your area and get a sense of, you know, often people have their social media accounts or you know, their newsletters, so you can get a sense of who they are and how they work and how they talk, because it's obviously such a personal topic and you're going to be pretty vulnerable, you know, so you want to make sure you find someone that you feel really comfortable with and you really like their way of working. So for me personally, the somatic part of my title is all about the mind body connection. So I'm all about teaching exercises and tools to help people get out of their head and into their body. So think less and feel more. Because a lot of the sexual concerns that people have, you know, there's a whole piece in education that we've talked about a lot, but a lot of it is about how do I slow down and feel. So people with, you know, difficulty orgasming or painful sexual experiences, you know, erectile difficulties, premature ejaculation, the list goes on and on and on. It's often about being too in your head. And so a lot of the tools that I teach is about how to feel more present. And so every sexologist has a slightly different approach. So definitely, you know, book in. A lot of people like myself offer free calls to ask these sorts of questions before making a commitment and going, I'll give this person a go. And if, you know, I'm not sure if I'm there yet, I'm not sure I'm ready to go and talk to a sexologist yet, because it is a bit of a big step for lots of people, you know, go out there and get some resources yourself first. So learn as much as you can using sex positive resources, whether it's podcasts, books, online courses, workshops, you know, just surrounding yourself with more expert led body positive, up-to-date education, and, you know, really challenge your own assumptions and beliefs that might be holding you back. Because we've been constantly fed information that maybe isn't serving you anymore, and so really having that more open-minded view when it comes to these topics. And, you know, if you're not someone that self-pleasures or masturbates, you know, at all or very much, you know, really sort of thinking, oh, I wonder why that is, you know, what's, you know, could I do something every day that brings my body pleasure? And I'm not talking sexual pleasure anymore. I'm talking anything that feels good for your body, whether it's, you know, really feeling that hot water on your scalp in the shower, or giving yourself a beautiful full body moisturizer, or going and getting that massage, or doing some yoga. Doing something every day that gives your body pleasure. And once you start doing that and you're releasing all of those pleasure chemicals in your body, you might start noticing a difference. And you might start craving more pleasure and prioritizing pleasure again, and bringing in sexual pleasure into that, you know, just a bit of curious self-touch and carving out the time for that is often the circuit breaker that people are needing to realize, actually, this is something that is good for me. It impacts, you know, my mental health and my sense of well-being, because pleasure is good for us, and yet we've been taught that it's not.
I love that. Pleasure is good for us. That's brilliant. And I think that's something that everybody needs to remember. Pleasure is good for us. And obviously I'm going to be linking everything about Alice in the podcast description. So if there's anything that Alice has said that you go, yep, I think I'm ready to start this journey, even if it's just to, you know, peek from the outsides on social media just to see and, you know, and gain up the courage, I think it's definitely something worth investing in. But before we end, when it comes to our sexual health, our relationship with ourselves, when it comes to pleasure, what is one key takeaway that you want the listeners to know?
Pleasure is good for you. It's good for your mental, physical, relationships, you know, all of those things. But a good one is also thinking about when you feel at your most confident, you know, happy, well. Think you're back to a time in your life when, yeah, things just felt good. You know, you felt good in your body, you're good in your sense of self, your confidence. That person, whoever they are, is often you know, who our most sexually confident person is, that, you know, how they show up in the bedroom. And that's why sex isn't this part of ourselves that should be kept in a box. Our sexual identity is a separate part of ourselves, only to be brought out, you know, twice a week with a partner. It's actually our sexual energy is a huge part of who we are. It's how we show up as our most confident, well, happy selves. And so who you are in those headspaces, if we can bring that person into the bedroom, that is when you'll probably feel at your most sexually happy and confident and explorative, and have that stronger sense of self when it comes to the sexual relationship you have with yourself. And people don't really think of themselves as, oh, my confident persona is also actually often my sexual persona.
Yeah.
And so think to yourself, who are they? How can I bring them out more inside and out? Inside and outside the bedroom.
I love that.
Find me on Instagram at MeganLuscombe_. Book a session or say hello at my website, meganluscombe.com.au.